very confused about the Genius Act. I thought there was a deal made by the president to make sure that included was going to be the central bank digital currency. There'd be no possibility of a backdoor to get that. So where are we?
This was a closed rule. Johnson did not allow us to make amendments to the Genius Act, to make an amendment to put a ban on CBDC in the Genius Act. We were told, you don't have a right to amendments. You don't get to do your legislative process anymore. You just have to vote on it. And they forced it through, making what I think is a fake deal. And I wish the Freedom Caucus had held, but they didn't. They want to work and they want to pass the president's agenda, and I do too. But I'm not willing to go along with the pathway to a central bank digital currency in a cashless society where none of us can control our money. Because I don't trust the government, and no one else should trust the government. And just because this administration is committed to that doesn't mean that a future administration will not lock down our bank accounts if we are not doing and saying what they want us to do. We've already been there. That was the past 4 years.
When you go past one of these number plate cameras, when you, quote, shouldn't, you won't be able to challenge the fine, because the fine will be taken out of your digital account the moment you transgress.
At the world's busiest airport in Atlanta,
all right, you're fully verified.
The TSA checkpoint has gotten a high-tech upgrade.
You're going to take your ID, insert it into the card reader.
Using this facial recognition camera system to compare a flyer's face to their picture on their ID in seconds.
The Genius Act, already greenlit by a bipartisan Senate, claims to slap a federal harness on stable coins. Stable coins aim for price stability through mechanisms like backing each coin with reserves of cash, bonds, or other assets. The Clarity Act is a tug of war over who gets to leash these digital assets. Will it be the SEC or the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, the CFTC, potentially prying them loose from the SEC's iron grip? A move the crypto rebels have been howling for. The anti-CBDC Surveillance State Act, championed by Republicans, aims to slam the door on a central bank digital currency, citing nightmares of government snooping and control. Yet many warn of a sinister backdoor, a legislative sleight of hand that could see these bills, if watered down in the Senate or hitched to must-pass juggernauts like the NDAA, could pave the way for a CBDC Trojan horse.
It's really hard to overstate how dangerous it is. It is literally the mark of the beast system, a global social credit score, the ESG corporate governance systems right down into your smart devices, your phone, the smart appliances, the AI, surveilling everyone in live time.
You don't expect your air-fried chips to come with a side of surveillance, but research has found they might.
Do I need an umbrella for tomorrow in London?
From tracking locations to listening to conversations to knowing your gender and date of birth, our devices, in some cases, are acutely smart.
And so it's really the ring of Sauron to bind everybody together with total control. And we have the head of the IMF and the World Bank and the International Mega Settlements and the head of the UN and all of them. We have Tedros, the head of the WHO, saying we need a global central bank digital currency to control everything you do, to lock you down during new pandemics they've got planned. This is the mechanism. It'll be your internet ID. It'll do everything. And if we think as populist and conservatives and Christians and common sense people that we've been debanked and harassed as conservatives before, this is exponentially more dangerous. And the big international banks that the Federal Reserve is part of, private, they have said this is their holy grail. And they're really, really trying to roll it out. And so the fact that there is a pathway to this with a digital central bank digital currency dollar in this Genius Act, and that only MTG and you and a few others have been exposing it, it is a nightmare.
John Bound reporting for InfoWars.
My friends know that I usually think everything's a scam, from supplements and products and vitamins. I don't take anything. I usually buy it, try it, don't feel the results, end up tossing and wasting money. So I love Alex Jones and the InfoWars crew, and Alex kept playing this video of Robert Kennedy Jr. putting some blue drops in what looked like water. And I wanted a way to support the team, so I decided to buy this methylene blue. This methylene blue, it is tremendous. I would not be making this video if I didn't believe in it. After I take it throughout the day, I start feeling better and better and better. My workouts, I feel like I'm 15 years younger than I am. And the app that I record my running on proves that my workouts are getting better. So I gotta tell you what, God, family, country, InfoWars, and methylene blue. Get it while you can.
America is under attack. Your future hangs in the balance. This is The Alex Jones Show.
All right, I've been following John Kiriakou for over a decade, longer, since the deep state, because he quietly, privately tried to get them to stop illegally torturing people when he was the head of counterterrorism in Afghanistan and then other areas. So I've been aware of him since that happened, however many decades ago it was, and getting targeted by the Bushes and all the rest of them. And I've read a lot of his writings, and I just remember the other day, I actually had one of his books, I read it years ago. He's a best-selling author as well. And we've done a couple good interviews with him, but man, I saw him on Tucker, I saw him on some other interviews, and I was like, wow, I want to get that guy on. Because I was kind of guiding it with, you know, the questions I had at the time about Iran and where that was going. But he has had experiences, and again, I'm not on a jag here to attack Israel and you know, just obsess on that all day. And I don't believe that, again, Israel previously was a dominant force other than our foreign policy in the Middle East, which General Wesley Clark and others exposed. We already knew it. Project American Century, you know, Israeli neocons, U.S. neocons, Rumsfeld, Wormser. All of them wanted to take down in just 5 years, seven countries. Well, here we are 25 years later and or 24 years later, and they've gotten six, and now they want Iran, who's allied with China and Russia and is, you know, not Iraq. And it's now never been clearer, though, that Israel, because of the power vacuum and the Democrats in trouble and the lowest fundraising ever and their poll numbers the lowest ever. I mean, they're badly coordinated. Trump's cutting off the NGO money. They're redistricting. They're going after the election fraud. They're cutting off funding to the states, you know, that don't put in voter ID. I mean, we're on a roll. This is great. Except into that vacuum, we dealt with 8-9 years ago, the Democrats, deep state, Brennan, Clapper, Comey. I was targeted. That's now been declassified partially, along with Trump, NSA wiretaps, all of it, starting in 2013, because I knew Trump was getting ready to run. And I was lumped into that. And so I wouldn't call Brennan, Clapper, Obama, you know, Israel operatives. I mean, they worked with Israel, but they were funding Arab Spring and their own, you know, agendas. But now, in my view, well-researched, it is accurate to say China was the main threat. Obviously, nobody debated that, of espionage and economic and military threats. And then you could move down the chain from that. Obviously, Russia in there. But no, Israel, not as a military threat per se, other than dragging us into war, so I guess it is the top threat, kind of, other than NATO keeping this thing going with Russia. But so I would say they're the second largest military threat by proxy or by black hole, and then they are, in my view, the number one beyond espionage, really soft coup threat, with them moving into the vacuum of the White House. And then there's the taboo of criticizing, you know, anything Israel, as you get called baby Hitler. No, Israel's a powerful, sophisticated group. And it's a fact, in my view, that they are now attempting a coup over the policies of the United States. And not just militarily, but what companies get chosen for AI funding, all of it. And with their history of transfers to China and others, it's just insane. So I heard John Kiriakou on several shows, and he experienced it. I only read one of his books. He's got, I think, 10 or more. The point is, he witnessed what I've been told by a lot of, I've had Mossad whistleblowers, famous ones on the show, talking about this decades ago. But the fact that he never ran into any intelligence agency that behaved or acted like this. And so I've kind of been ranting there. I don't know his exact assessment of this, but does he think in general what I said is accurate, or what, or can he give us who he thinks the main threats are? And then looking into this, what he thinks of my statement that, I mean, I don't think it's even debatable that this is an attempted Israeli Likudnik takeover. I mean, they kind of had that with George W. Bush, at least on foreign policy. And then how he thinks we could extricate ourselves from that, or does he disagree with that? And what does he think of the bizarre Streisand effect? I mean, Trump couldn't be doing something worse to tie himself to Epstein as saying, move on, there's nothing to see here. These aren't the droids you're looking for. You've got all that. So John Kiriakou, find all his books in a Substack, everything at johnkiriakou.substack.com, johnkiriakou.com, K-I-R-I-A-K-O-U, and so much more. He's a journalist and former CIA counterterrorism officer, head of counterterrorism places like Afghanistan, and I won't go over his whole bio, but he was a internal whistleblowers, they try to set him up. That's all been proven. So thank you so much, John, for joining us. I know that was a long intro. You've got the floor.
Thank you so much. I have to say that I do agree with you. I've said for a very long time, and I'm gonna stake out really the same position that you just staked out. This has nothing to do with whether or not we like Israel. This has nothing to do with whether or not we believe Israel has a right to exist. Of course it has a right to exist. Nobody's debating that. At least very few people are debating that. But the issue is we cannot chain ourselves to Israel for better or for worse and just pretend that Israel's interests are always our interests. It's just simply not the case. And I have to say I laughed out loud when I saw in the clip that you ran the Israelis claiming that they haven't spied on us since Jonathan Pollard. That is just simply false. I was in a debate with the former head of Mossad and Alan Dershowitz a few weeks ago on the Piers Morgan Show. And the former head of Mossad, General Danny something, said exactly the same thing. Well, we haven't spied on the United States since Jonathan Pollard. That's just not true. Pollard was arrested in 1985. The year of the spy, if you remember, that's what Ronald Reagan declared it, the year of the spy. In 1990, 5 years later, on my very first day at the CIA, the CIA's head of security told us that the FBI had identified 187 undeclared Israeli intelligence officers spread all around the country for the purpose of stealing our defense secrets. They're targeting almost exclusively American defense contractors. And yes, they are a threat to our national security.
And it's on record they sell it to China. That's not very friendly.
That's the whole problem there. You know, on the one hand, we would say, okay, it might even be akin to Canada stealing our secrets. All right, they shouldn't, but what are you going to do? But it's not just that they steal our secrets to ensure that they are as safe as possible. They steal our secrets to then sell to the Russians or the Chinese, or not even to sell so much as to trade. For example, Jonathan Pollard, whose picture is on the screen right now, one of the most prolific spies in American history, got 30 years in prison and did every single day of the 30 years. Jonathan Pollard gave the Israelis information on Russian, I'm sorry, Soviet troop movements, for example. The Israeli government then gave that top secret information to the Soviets in exchange for the release of Soviet Jews and permission for them to emigrate to Israel. Well, you know what? I feel bad for the Soviet Jews and what they went through in the 1980s. But it is not up to the likes of Jonathan Pollard or the Israeli government to decide that the Soviet Union should have top secret American defense information.
Well, Pollard wasn't a U.S. citizen, or if I remember correctly, but it's treason.
Oh, yeah, he was. He was, and he was working for the defense or the Naval Intelligence Service.
Yeah, I was kind of begging the question. The point is that's treason.
Exactly. Yes.
So, but it's like, oh, well, it's okay. He did it for Israel, so he can give the Soviets, our main enemy, with nuclear submarines pointing missiles at us. That's okay. It's preposterous.
It is. It's outrageous. You know, I spoke with a contact at the Israeli embassy recently, and he said something that really bothered me very much. He said that embassy officials here in Washington are under orders to equate anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism. They've had success in doing this so far, but they want to get us to a point where if you disagree publicly with anything that the Israeli government does, it's because you're anti-Semitic.
Well, a bunch of states, sir, as you know, Texas is the worst. And overall, I like the governor, but on this, he's crazy. He's sanctioning San Marcos, a big city south of me from Austin, because some of their city council had a vote against, you know, the indiscriminate killing of civilians in Gaza. And he's saying, well, you know, we're going to sanction you and put controls. And now they're making any business that gets a state contract pledge allegiance to Israel. Have you seen this?
That's right. I have seen it. A friend of mine was contracted to give a speech at Georgia State University. And she was told that she had to sign a loyalty pledge to Israel as well. And she said, I'm American. I'm not Israeli. I'm not going to sign a loyalty pledge. And so they canceled her speech. Now,
I'm going to ask Israel a question. I want to add, and I'm not saying it's one monolithic group, but Netanyahu and their lobby. I mean, it's like Nick Fuentes. He worked at the Daily Wire, was pro-Israel, so they tried to make him go to Israel, tried to sheep dip him basically in their operations. He said, why are you doing this? I thought you're American. So then they fired him and then tried to get him banned everywhere, and then he turned into this. Don't they understand, like, going out and saying you got to sign loyalty pledges in, like, 15 states to have a state contract is making people go, well, why do I have to do that? I mean, I couldn't figure out a way to turn people against me more.
Oh, my gosh. Exactly right. Exactly right. Even for people who don't follow these issues and don't care one way or the other about Israel, if somebody plopped a declaration in front of you and said, you have to sign this or you cannot have the contract, and what they're asking you to sign is a declaration saying that you will never criticize Israel, well, who in their right mind would sign something
like
that?
That's like a weird social credit score. Well, remember, McCarthy and others, and Eisenhower for a little while with Nixon, wanted loyalty oaths in the government that you were loyal to the U.S. and not a communist, and people said that's unconstitutional. And I could see it was a little too far, but saying you're loyal to the U.S. is bad, but you can say you got to be loyal to Israel when you're a U.S. citizen.
Yeah, it doesn't make any kind of sense at all. I shouldn't laugh because it's not funny. It's actually quite dangerous. And I'll tell you, one of the things that bothers me the very, very most is that the Christian community here in the United States should be up in arms over things like this. The Israelis have essentially wiped out the indigenous Christian community in Israel, in the West Bank, and in Gaza.
Two weeks ago, they just burned down one of the oldest Christian settlements the Jewish settlers did.
That's exactly right. They burned it down. And they destroyed St. Porfirio's church in Gaza, the oldest continually operating Christian church anywhere in the world. And what, we're not permitted to complain about that? It doesn't make sense.
So where do you see this going? And looking at the Trump administration, because I know you're dialed in, how much Israeli infiltration? I know we can't say exactly, but it's pretty blatant at this point. I mean, we know they're in control of the Middle Eastern policy to a great extent, but I mean, it looks like they're going for broke. How bad is it?
I think it's bad, but I will say that the move of the American embassy in Israel from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem aside, I think that President Trump is very serious when he talks about guaranteeing Israel's right to exist and guaranteeing Israel's security. That's fine. I think he truly believes that the Abraham Accords are a force for peace and that things will get better if Saudi Arabia joins the Abraham Accords. Great. But President Trump is in this unique situation right now where he can be the one to bring some sort of real peace to the region. There was a piece in Haaretz, the wonderful Israeli newspaper, just a couple of weeks ago, saying that one of the things that the president is suggesting, and we haven't seen this from the American side yet, we've seen it only in Haaretz, but one of the things that the president is suggesting is that Gaza fall administratively under the auspices of Saudi Arabia, that it disarm, so there would be no Gaza military or Gaza police force. The Saudis would develop the Gazan economy by building a port, an airport, flood it with money, put everybody to work, allow them to manufacture something that they can export. And then you don't need all this fighting anymore.
And then Netanyahu steps up attacks because he doesn't want that.
Exactly.
Just like, Israel helped create Hamas to destabilize it. It's the same story.
Yes. Couldn't agree more.
That is disgusting.
It's awful. And what's incredible to me is that he doesn't see how incredibly short-sighted this is. I was in a restaurant in New York the other day, and I was talking to a friend of mine, having lunch with a friend of mine, and we were talking about these very issues. And there were these two women next to us, both in their 80s, and they were quietly listening to what we had to say. And then finally, one of them said, "Excuse me, I couldn't help but to overhear your conversation. We're both Jewish, and we agree with you on this issue." They said, "Netanyahu is so far to the right that he's forcing people who otherwise would be pro-Israel or wouldn't be paying attention one way or the other to become anti-Israel. And it's a short walk from being anti-Israel to being anti-Semitic, that it is Netanyahu who is creating anti-Semitism."
I totally agree. And even Michael Savage is a pro-American. He's, you know, he's not an Israel first guy, but he's pro-Israel. He says Netanyahu needs to go.
Just a couple of days ago, I was on the Piers Morgan show again, and I was on with Jack Posobiec and two left-wing bloggers. And at the end, Piers asked us about our position on Israel. Every one of the four of us said, of course, Israel has a right to exist. Israel has a right to defend itself. But my God, slaughtering tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, perhaps, of women, children, elderly. You flatten all seven
of them.
On TV. It's the first televised genocide. And then you flatten all of the hospitals. There's not enough food for anybody. People are dying of thirst. Come on. Where's the end here? It's too much. And then Pierce said that was probably the first time that he had four guests who agreed across the board on Israel.
Well, and then you've got the left that is just frothing, basically pro-Hitler now, while they call conservatives Hitler with no evidence.
Yeah, that doesn't help.
It doesn't help.
No, that doesn't help. We've got to be constructive. Like you just said, this is a genocide. This is a genocide, and there is still a chance to save some people. So we've got to do the right thing here. We've got to stand up to the Israelis.
On October 7th, he announced, you know, out of the Old Testament, the ethnic cleansing. I mean, he said, we're going to cleanse this.
And if you look at the international accords that have been signed since the end of the Second World War, this is the definition. This is the legal definition of ethnic cleansing, and ethnic cleansing is a form of genocide.
And remember, a year ago, Netanyahu floated a memo to move the Gazans not to Egypt, but to Europe and the U.S. And again, people that don't know, Saudi Arabia is reforming, in my view, and they're more of an expert than I. They are really working with Israel. They've talked to Trump. They would set it all up, have security, turn it into a beautiful golf courses, hotels, beautiful beach. Everybody would have jobs. They would kick Hezbollah, Hamas out. And it would be great. Israel would have a trading partner right there. And Saudi Arabia's like ready. And they're reforming. Yeah. And they're saying women are going to get the burqas off. I mean, so we see reform starting. And Netanyahu's like, no, we're taking it all. And they think we can't, you know, do translation. We can watch the national TV shows, in Hebrew. And I mean, it is just frothing. Absolutely frothing. We're going to kill all these people. And they don't know that people are watching that.
Yes, seriously. You know, on my very first overseas tour with the CIA, I was stationed in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And toward the end of my tour, the Saudis came to us. They came to talk to the U.S. ambassador, Ambassador Chaz Freeman. And they said, look, we have this idea for Gaza. Hamas had just been formed, but they had this idea for Gaza where they go in and they work with the Israelis to build a port and an airport. And that would allow the Israelis to ship things out of Gaza. It would put Gazans to work. Maybe they could encourage some manufacturing. They would allow fishing. For example, the Gazans are not allowed to fish. Can you imagine? Huh. It's a coastal enclave, and they're not allowed to fish. And so we went to the Israelis informally and said, look, the Saudis are willing to pay for all this. They want to bring electricity. They want to bring clean water and a port and an airport. And the Israelis said, absolutely not. Now, that was 34 years ago. and we're still having the same conversation.
Yeah, and then again, for people out there, Netanyahu says he's defending civilization. You don't create Hamas, have them destabilize it, admittedly, so there's not a good leadership that's reasonable. Lately, Turkey, NATO, and Israel put in the leader of Al-Qaeda in Syria, and then Israel goes, well, we blew up their military, so it's okay. It's total statelet destabilization, great game, balkanization crap, and it's evil, and the public understands it. Not the crazy left, kill all the Jew people. We're not talking about the Soros-funded people, who I think they fund to do that to actually bolster it. But we're talking about reasonable people like Trump wanting to fix this, and Netanyahu saying no, and then waving his moral flag around, you know, that he's against Hamas when he's been their sugar daddy until, what, 3 years ago?
I'm glad you used the word balkanization just now, because that's exactly what we're seeing happen. And we're seeing it happen in slow motion. You mentioned at the start of this segment that there's one of the last Christian villages in the West Bank is being wiped out this week. As we speak, there are Israeli settlers from New Jersey and New York, and they're forcing Palestinian Christians out of their homes, burning down their olive trees, and they're just taking their land, seizing their land. Well, what we're seeing, if you look at a map of the West Bank now, is you see these little circles, and they dot the map, and those are Israeli settlements. That's what Bosnia looks like, right? That's what Republika Srpska looks like in the Balkans. It's these little islands surrounded by the land of another state. And these little statelets don't work. They don't work.
Well, like I said, Trump coming out and saying don't look into Epstein is a total Streisand effect. A five-year-old would know that. Israel on TV saying we're taking all the land from the Christians, from the Muslims, it's ours, and we're going to kill everybody, and you know, announcing the biblical name for that. And this is like this week, and then saying, oh, we're not doing anything wrong when the whole world sees it. Do you think Israel and the Likudniks are in a bubble? I mean, do they not know what they're doing?
I think that they are so confident in continued support from the United States that they can do anything that they want. They don't really care what, let's say, the French have to say or the Chinese have to say. They care only what the Americans have to say, because they need our veto in the United Nations Security Council. And so long as the Americans don't put pressure on them, they'll just continue to push the envelope to see how far they can go.
Well, I mean, just the last few years, you'd think October 7th, Israel popularity goes up. Then they don't just kill the leaders of the groups. They go after the civilians. And now the polls show Israel is basically the most unpopular country in the world.
Yeah, and that's not happened before. You know, every single year, Gallup International does a global poll where they ask people in every country on earth who the greatest threat to world peace is. And, you know, for the Greeks, it's the Turks, and the Turks, it's the Greeks. Pakistanis and the Indians, the same thing. The North Koreans and the South Koreans, the same thing. You expect that. For the rest of the world, it's usually the United States is the greatest threat.
Stay there. We got to go to break. Let's come back with that right now.
By and large, the things that you buy for, like, wellness or lifestyle or just, like, you know, you don't want to feel like detoxification support. Those are all very potent antioxidants, like everything that we sell, like what's in this Ultimate Life Force formula. The NAC in here is a precursor to glutathione. It's the precursor.
Huge announcement, ladies and gentlemen. I am beyond excited about this. I've wanted this knife for a year. It's super high quality. They finally got the right supplier and a bunch of them. It's in a beautiful keepsake black box with my signature in silver lettering on the top. And when you go inside, this incredible combat battle dagger, limited edition Alex Jones signature battle dagger, a high-tech, super high-quality sheath with a high-tech clip under your belt or your pants. And it's got a special system where the knife doesn't come out when it's upside down. It takes a little pull to get it out. It is amazing. This is, in my opinion, the very best defense battle dagger you can get. It's an incredible price for $79.99 right now. This knife by itself in store sells for $100 every day, but we bought 5,000 of them, so got the price down really low. Wholesale, so we can pass that on to you, and the profit we make goes in to fund this operation. So you don't just get a great defensive system for yourself and your family, great in your car, great on your side, great in your purse, your glove compartment, also skin a buck with it, whatever you need. This is an amazing knife. You not only, though, get something to defend yourself, you defend the Republic in the information war by funding this operation. So get your limited edition Alex Jones signature battle dagger at thealexjonesstore.com right now, and it keeps this operation on the air. This isn't just a blade, it's a symbol of freedom. Limited edition Alex Jones signature battle dagger is forged by patriots ready to defend the Republic from the globalist agenda, featuring a double-edged black-coated blade for unmatched durability and precision. This dagger is built to last. On one side is etched my signature, while the other side proudly bears 1776, a reminder that the spirit of revolution lives on stronger than ever. With its ergonomic non-slip grip designed ready for any mission, the dagger isn't just a tool, it's a statement. Whether you're adding it to your collection or keeping it close as a symbol of resistance and for defense, this blade is for those who know that the answer in 1984 is 1776. Get yours now. And then, we are announcing a limited sale, the Power Drive Bundle of Power Plant and Methyl Drive, which goes incredibly good with Methylene Blue. And both of these give you incredible natural energy, clarity, and focus. But you mix them together with Methylene Blue, I will tell you, in Chase Geyser's observation himself, 10 times stronger than Turbo Force. Did you hear what I just said? 10 times stronger than Turbo Force. Get yours now, discounted massively, 50% off when you get them together. 50% off on the Power Drive Bundle for a limited time, 1 week, at thealexjonesstore.com, and it funds this operation, 1776 worldwide. Please remember that this broadcast is only as powerful as you make it. When you share the live feed from Real Alex Jones on X, on your email list, your text message, on other platforms, word of mouth on X, it changes the world. When you share the feed from Infowars.com/show, it changes the world. So remember, Paul Revere's, you're not part of the solution. You are the solution. You're everything. When you share the live feed, when you share the clips of the show, when you send that out to everyone you know, that's the reach, the amplification. That is 99% of this operation. You are the whole shooting match. And the info war is everything. And you are the mind, the bones, the guts, the blood, the will, the soul of the info war. So release your will and power now. Destroy them.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones. Resistance to tyrants is obedience to God. Live from the Infowars.com studios, it's Alex Jones.
You know, we got words for it in different languages. You got bravado, you got arrogance, you got hubris, you got chutzpah. And what Israel is doing and continues to do is very self-destructive. And so our guest, John Kiriakou, very famous CIA whistleblower, former counterterrorism officer, head of counterterrorism Afghanistan and other countries. I want to soon move into Epstein and other issues and, you know, what else is on your radar. But just finishing up, you got cut off by the break. I've seen the polls everywhere. You're mentioning, I think, a Gallup poll. We covered that a while back. For the first time ever, Israel is seen around the world as the number one threat to world peace. But you were going actually over the numbers. I don't have the poll in front of me, but it seems you do. So just finish up, John. Sorry, that break was a hard break.
Oh, no, that's okay. Now the Israelis are seen as the greatest threat to world peace. And here we are all these years later, all these rounds of negotiations later, all these different ideas later. And not only has nothing changed, the situation has become even worse.
So I know it's hard to predict things, but in the short term, midterm, long term, it looks to me like the Israeli control of the White House is getting more intense. And I'm seeing major pressure, though, everywhere, and a real awakening to this that was already happening, but now it's supercharged. And it's not how the Israel lobby wants to brand it as pro-Hitler or pro-radical Islam. That's not working. And then I understand Israel's got nuclear weapons. They're not going anywhere. I don't want them destroyed. I think they have a right to exist. I'm not you know, sitting here obsessed with Jews all day. But with these policies and the chutzpah issue, Israel's now seen as the main villain, and they can't just juxtapose it to the unpopular mullahs either. People are more sophisticated. On this trajectory, where do you see this going?
I honestly don't see it getting any better. And part of the reason is that this is not at all a partisan issue. Democrats and Republicans' ideas about Israel are almost identical, at least within the mainstream. Of course, there are going to be these radicals on the far left and on the far right that are going to have a different position. But there's no pressure from the United States for the Israelis to change their position. And there are no bold desires or propositions for overarching peace agreements. You know, we're not seeing calls for another Oslo round. We're not seeing calls for a grand deal to make all of these issues go away. And in fact, I think that the Saudis would be interested in participating in something like that. Undoubtedly, the Qataris would be interested in participating. The Palestinians would probably beg to participate in something. But the Israelis know that nobody's going to force them. And so there's no incentive for them to go to the negotiating table.
So what happens in Gaza? And then, of course, they're just going to expand more into the Golan. They're going to expand in the West Bank. I mean, there is a greater Israel project. That's not a conspiracy theory. They wear it on their army IDF uniforms. Hell, they want, like, to make Israel 10 times bigger. That's insane.
Yeah, in fact, they bombed Syria again today. And the Syrians, you know, the Syrian government is just this little radical statelet that's trying to convince everybody that they've left their radicalism behind them. And I hope to God that they have. But the Israelis are free just to come and go and bomb anybody they want. And they do it. They do it all the time. So what do I expect in Gaza? I expect more of the same. I think that the plan is to turn the whole place to rubble, and it's to force Gazans out. You mentioned a few minutes ago that the Israelis had been encouraging Palestinians to move to the United States or move to Egypt or move to Jordan. And when that wasn't forthcoming, they came up with this cockamamie plan to take all the Gaza Palestinians and send them to Albania. And the Albanians said, well, we don't want them. We have our own economic problems. Then they came up with this stupid idea to send them all to an island off the coast of Indonesia. And the Indonesians said, well, we don't know anything about this. We're not giving up an island to become Palestine. The truth is, all of those are forms of genocide. Forced removal of a people is a form of genocide.
And we have the 3,000-year-old Moses and the Jews being kicked out of Egypt, and then the Jews and the Diasporas and Hitler, and they're literally doing what was done to them now.
Exactly. Exactly. It wasn't right then, and it's not right now.
Wow. And then they go, oh, there's no such thing as a Palestinian. None of them live there. I mean, it's just...
Oh, I hate that argument so much.
Don't you love Ben Shapiro? You mentioned it earlier, but you didn't say his name. He and others are like, there was only one Israeli spy, Jonathan Pollard. The former prime minister told me we don't spy on the U.S. But when Ted Cruz got asked about it a few weeks ago by Tucker, he said, well, of course they spy on us. They're our friends.
Of course they do. Yeah, of course they do. Of course they do. They always have. It's as simple as that. And if you talk to anybody who has served at the American embassy in Israel,
I saw you on a podcast, I forget which one, tell that story. Describe, out of all the intelligence agencies you've dealt with, I imagine it's dozens, or tell us how many, directly, you've been all the world, who is the most aggressive and the most deceptive?
Yeah, by far the Mossad. There's just no, hands down, there's just no comparison. I told this story on a podcast where two friends of mine with whom I worked at the CIA were transferred to Israel, and they were both known to the Israeli services. They were declared, what's called declared to the Israeli services. So when they arrive in Israel, the station chief takes them to the Mossad and says, you know, my two people here, they're going to be here for 2 years. They're not going to be working against Israel, of course. The wife is going to work on Palestinian issues at the embassy, and the husband is going to take Arabic classes at the university. Everybody's happy. But then the ambassador has a welcome party for them, and when they get back home from the welcome party, somebody had rearranged all the furniture in their living room, just as a signal that, hey, we can mess with you anytime we want. And of course, they reported it. Several months later, the ambassador has a Christmas party. They go to the Christmas party and they come back, and people had defecated in all of the toilets in their house and left it unflushed. Now, why would you do that? Just to intimidate, just to anger, and just to show disrespect. Finally, another year and a half passes. It's time for them to leave. The ambassador has a going away party for them. They go to the party. They drive back to Jerusalem. People had gone into the house. The dog was whimpering under the dining room table. They had cut the dog's tail off, and they wrapped it in gauze and in medical tape. Now, why would you do something like that? What do you hope to accomplish just by treating an ally that way? And of course, you know, the CIA has to go to the Israelis and say, stop harassing our people. And the Israelis say, okay, okay. And then they're good for a year or two. And then they just start doing it again.
So,
but that's the nature of our relationship.
That is not how you make friends and influence people. And
no.
I mean, take Steve Bochenek. I know he worked in intelligence a bunch of places, co-authored books with Tom Clancy. But, you know, he's Jewish, by the way. He said no. He said there's nothing worse than what he dealt with over the decades, you know, with Israel and all the rest of it. I also saw you tell another story about them coming to the embassy or the CIA and meeting with you guys and always giving gifts with open bugs in them, knowing you're going to find it. Like, is it just like they don't want you there? I mean, but this is our loving ally, our best little pal.
Yeah, this is something else that we had to deal with. You carry on liaison meetings all the time with visiting intelligence services, literally every single day. And the Israelis, we had to stop allowing onto the CIA headquarters campus, because every time they'd come, they would bring a gift. And every time they brought a gift, it had a listening device installed inside, and it was packed with batteries. And we would tell them, you guys have to stop doing this. Every time you come here, you try to bug our conference rooms. So now when we meet with the Israelis, it's off campus. You just can't trust them.
And by the way, if I, as a U.S. citizen, let's say, ask for a tour, and I got caught at Laneley, even in the cafeteria, placing a bug, I'd probably get 20 years in prison. It's espionage.
Without any question, you would go straight to federal prison. Yes.
So, and if I work for the CIA and I leak something, I'd go to jail. So the point is that how, I don't even understand the psychology of that. And not just you telling me this has come out. What is the motive of behaving like this?
I've been told that the motive is the desire, the unequivocal desire for survival, that the Israelis understand, sure, we're friends, we're allies, but nobody can save the Israelis but the Israelis at the end of the day. And on the off chance that we're not giving them literally everything we have in terms of defense and intelligence, then by God, they're going to steal it from us and they're going to use it to protect
themselves.
But
don't they get being highly aggressive like that is what's turning everybody against them?
I don't think they care.
Well, let me ask you this.
I think they don't care.
Did you ever see, grading them, were there other agencies that, because you know, anybody that really studies history, I'm not an intelligence agency, but I've studied, it's very interesting. You know, the Russians are all just straight up, we love you, we're your friend, you want sex, you want money. The Chinese, same deal. You know, sex operatives, stuff like that.
And that's, yeah.
But instead, the Israelis is just pure muscle, pure in your face, pure blackmail, pure attack. That historically, I would think would be the. I know I've read books about interrogators and how to mob people. Like usually, it's the good cop that gets people to do what they want. It's,
exactly.
So why do they behave like
exactly.
this?
Exactly, Alex. I never encountered another intelligence service that didn't understand from deep down didn't understand that it is the light touch that wins a person over. It's the good cop who wins the person over. You can't just punch people in the face over and over and over and over and expect them to do your bidding or to treat you like an equal and a friend. The Russians would never treat people like this. The Chinese, the Cubans, the British, nobody would.
How do they operate? Because I heard you saying the British were about the best you'd seen. But I mean, describe the British versus the Russians. It's so interesting, or the Chinese.
You engage a person in conversation, and that conversation you want to eventually lead to friendship. And when the conversation leads to friendship, the friendship is going to lead to something even closer, to the point where this person is going to be willing to commit espionage for you, or in some cases to commit treason for you, just because you are their best friend. When I first got hired at the CIA, I asked a question in training about the use of honeypots, for example. A honeypot is when you try to entrap someone using sex. And my instructor said, oh, no, we haven't done that since the 50s. That just doesn't work. It makes people angry. It doesn't allow you to create a relationship based on trust, right? And you want the relationship really to be based on trust. Well, the Israelis don't care if you like them or trust them. They're going to punch you in the face, and they're going to poop in your toilets, and they're going to cut your dog's tail off, and then they're going to run a guy against you in Congress because you're not pro-Israeli enough. I never understood it.
And so I go back to the Nick Fuentes thing, very popular, very articulate. And I don't agree with many things he says, but I didn't know his origin story. The other day I did an interview, and I actually watched part of it, and I looked it up. It was true. He was pro-Israel, working at the Daily Wire, and they literally tried to get him to go to Israel, make him do all this pro-Israel stuff. He goes, what's this about Israel? So he starts investigating and finds out basically they're an Israeli front, probably actually Mossad. We know these billionaires out of Texas that are Zionist funded. And then they fire him and persecute him and come after him and then turn him into this big enemy. I mean, it's just crazy.
It is crazy. It is crazy because, you know, the number of people who are willing to put up with this has to be finite. At some point, people have to stand up and say, enough is enough. America first. We're not doing this anymore, and we are not going to let you treat us this way.
I mean, I'm not the toughest guy around. I never started fights people for no reason, but I've certainly learned, even just a regular little skinny guy washing his car, you go over and knock him upside the head, he's probably going to attack you. I mean, I just don't. It's and then Israel's like, oh, we're loving, oh, we're friendly, oh, we're all this other stuff. And then everybody I talk to, including Jews that have been in the CIA, say, no, Israel's the worst. And it didn't just start yesterday. I mean, it's just bizarre.
Yeah, it's not good at all. I don't know how they get anything accomplished internationally. When you pick fights with everybody, including or especially with your closest friends in the world, it just doesn't make any sense.
So are there any good factions in Israel, or how could Israel reform itself? Because I really want Israel to succeed and not be the detonator for nuclear war.
Well, there's been this odd political change in Israel, and it's being attributed to the influx just over the last 20 or 30 years of thousands and thousands of Jews from the former Soviet Union, but especially Russia and Ukraine. They've pushed the body politic so far to the right that Likud, if you can imagine this, Likud is now seen as one of the moderate factions. The only way to really change this is to change the political system. And I'm going to tell you what the Greeks did, because this actually has worked. Greece had the same kind of system that Israel did, where there were, 35 different political parties. Nobody ever got a majority. And so you had one weak coalition government after the next, like Israel has now. In fact, the government technically collapsed yesterday in Israel, and Netanyahu now leads a minority government. There hasn't been a call for a vote of no confidence, but it's probably coming. So what the Greeks did is they changed the electoral law, saying that you had to have 5% of the vote to get elected to parliament. So there are still minor parties that are represented there. But whoever came in first got an extra 50 seats in parliament. And that way, one single party has the authority to govern. That's the only way they're going to be able to get past this in Israel. Otherwise, they're going to be at the beck and call of these crazy religious parties,
and as
where
you
the
said,
leaders of these
anytime
parties,
a cult is under attack, it tends to get more extreme, more in the bubble. And again, Israel's leadership is its own worst enemy. I'm serious, folks. I'm like, literally care about
indeed.
Israel. I mean, and it's got nuclear weapons, so I care about it not getting cornered. So in closing, I can talk to you for hours. Everybody should get your books. Amazing, sir. I know
thank
you're very
you.
Busy. Epstein, and I'm not trying to go back to Israel again, but obviously intelligence agency. I mean, you know, Maxwell, obviously. MI6, Russia, Mossad, buried Mount Olive's military burial. You've got, even though he was in Eastern Europe, World War II. I mean, all of that. And then Trump's bizarre behavior in the last 12 days, flip-flopping, creating mass Streisand effects. What is your view? What are your sources? What in the hell is going on here? And is Israel using...
Yeah.
The Epstein file that we know the Democrats and Brennan and them had and probably took out by some about them and stuck to something about Trump. I've been told that's what it is, mm-hmm. even though it's fake. And now Trump is just sick of it, but he's created the Streisand effect. That's a huge subject, but what do you think is going on?
Yeah, I think this has been handled very poorly. I really believe that Donald Trump doesn't have anything to hide. He's been very transparent about his one-time friendship with Jeffrey Epstein. And I also believe that the FBI probably has destroyed evidence, maybe not in the last couple of weeks, maybe it happened 4 years ago or 10 years ago, or who knows. But, you know, when we talk about files, we're not necessarily talking about paper files in an envelope that says, you know, evidence of pedophilia. We're talking about computer hard drives and disks and videos and DVDs. There has to be something out there. And I think that the American people and the victims of Jeffrey Epstein deserve an answer. You're showing the Maxwell family, including Ghislaine. And Ghislaine Maxwell's father was a well-known Israeli asset, Mossad asset. I've said this before. I'll say it again. I feel very strongly about this. I think that Jeffrey Epstein was a Mossad access agent. I think that the support of Jeffrey Epstein as someone who was just a proud and loyal Jew and not an access agent that we're hearing from the likes of Alan Dershowitz is nonsense. And I think the only way to put this thing to bed is the president is going to have literally everything released. When Pam Bondi said last week that the videos that they have showed child pornography and pedophilia, they're disgusting, they're never going to be released. Yeah, that's great. That's fine. We don't want to see videos of child pornography.
Said, we want child porn. No, we want the perpetrators prosecuted. And how dare
exactly.
them say we want child porn released.
Exactly. Identify the men on those tapes and prosecute them. That's all we're asking for.
So let me ask you this, though, as an analyst and, you know, and former counterterrorism head. Trump's body language, I mean, it was angry, scared at the press conferences.
Angry. Yeah.
Flipping out, saying they manipulated the file, which the whole Democrat angle Brennan did have. So that makes sense. But just the handling of it and the behavior, I keep saying this, you couldn't behave worse to act incriminated. And then people thought I was attacking Trump. I was saying, I'm scared. I mean, this is bizarre. I'm actually shook to my very core here about what is this?
I was surprised by his reaction in the cabinet room where he was sitting next to Pam Bondi, and the reporter asked Pam Bondi about, you know, the Epstein file, and then the president interrupting and saying, "You don't have to answer that if you don't want to. Do you want to answer that?" And then he says to the reporter, "Why are you still asking these questions about Epstein? That creep has been dead for years." Well, it was the president that raised this during the campaign. It was the president who said he was going to get to the bottom of it and was going to release all the information.
I mean, 5 months ago, they had the press conference with the files saying part two is coming.
That's right. Just release it. It's as simple as that. Just release it.
And him saying to the reporter, "We were just talking about dead kids in Texas. You just desecrated them." I mean, it was just desperate. Don't ask questions. Don't ask questions. Well, anybody knows.
I was surprised.
So looking at that fear... I mean, he said, "Oh, the Democrats had the file." I think I've talked to sources. That's what it is. They took some of the Jane Does that were fake. You know, when they were first targeting Trump, they knew he was going to run. They started surveilling him. That's been released 2013. I was part of the same deal. NSA files that got released, leaked to us. But the point is that I believe Trump. They would have already released it to Bernie before. I've never seen any of the MO that he was involved in that. Plus, he's not the type that would go compromise himself even if he was into kids, which he's right. not. Obviously not in Russia getting pissed on. That's ridiculous, too. The same people. So it makes sense that they're only going to put in the file what embarrasses him, probably, you know, some FBI reports. So then he has to do a special counsel. He has to bring it out and meet it head on instead of acting like he's running scared. And I've never seen Trump run scared like this. I think that's the way to say it. I don't say this to hurt Trump. I have to tell the truth. I'm seeing running scared behavior. And then I ask myself, okay, then what is it?
I wonder if he's been threatened. I wonder if the Democrats have something that maybe they made up out of whole cloth. I mean, my God, we're all afraid of what AI can do these days and deep fakes and all of this kind of thing. So I wonder if he would just rather this go away, even at the expense of having guilty people go free or not be prosecuted, just because he doesn't want to have to fight a fight that is going to be made up and almost.
Well, sure. I mean, it's logical. They didn't want him to use this against them, so they drop a dime on themselves, which we actually put out. And Boyle's great, but he said, "I got a call from my New York guy. They've got it all. We're going to get to Bondi tomorrow," and we broke it. But obviously, whatever they leave in New York and then let Trump know they have, and then he gets it and doesn't want any. Oh, my God, we're not releasing this. It's a new Russiagate. It's all fake. I think he's told us that this is a setup. And I actually believe him.
But that argues then for the appointment of a special counsel, because then the special counsel can do the forensic investigation and say the president's right. This is all fake.
All right, do five more minutes with us. We got to go to break. John, I could have you on for 10 hours. We got to do commercial-free podcasts sometimes. Those are huge as well. John Kiriakou, johnkiriakou.com. Real fast, you've written so many books. What, if you recommend one book to people, what is it?
I think it's my second book. It's called Doing Time Like a Spy, How the CIA Taught Me to Survive and Thrive in Prison.
Which you got for exposing torture. And
Thank you, Barack Obama. Yes.
What a nice person. And is he an Arabist? I'll ask you that question when I come back. But first, ladies and gentlemen, who is Obama really? John just realized that he's got an interview right now, John Kiriakou, so he's got to go. But we were just telling sex operative stories, because I'm not an intelligence agency, but I study it all, so they treat me like that. And I was saying, yeah, the Russians are the main ones, sex operatives. Oh, absolutely, they still do that. He was telling me wild stories. You got to come back on very, very soon. You're an expert on... You also privacy issues, really concerned about this digital currency they're trying to add in this genius act. But John, thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Good to see you.
I appreciate it.
There's a lot of controversy around this network about Alex Jones, for example.
Alex Jones, the far-right conspiracy theorist who is apparently... Alex Jones.
Scum! Russian scum!
InfoWars comes to mind.
Reputation's amazing. I will not let you down. You will be very, very impressed, I hope.
Just got in my methylene blue ultra. Methylene blue USP grade from thealexjonesstore.com. And I've heard all the rants and raves about this. I'm real interested to see how I'm going to feel. I'm going to do a third dropper and then some water right now. And I am going to see, that's plenty. Maybe that's a little bit more. I'm going to mix this up. And pretty excited to see how this is going to work. So after I fully drink this, I will let everybody know the effects of hopefully of what is the unlimited power. What's going on, Xers? Jay Rocket here. Just giving y'all an update. It's been an hour past doing the one dropper of the ultramethylene blue USP grade, the alexjonesstore.com. Currently at the gym right now, and it's hard to explain what I feel other than I do feel the mental clarity
I don't have any cloudy thoughts. My focus seems relaxed, but very on point. And the energy kind of feels clean. No jittery, things like that. I haven't really felt any tingling or anything. Maybe if I'll probably take a, you know, an extra dropper next time. This is on an empty stomach as well. So definitely feel just cool, calm, and collected, but very focused, very centralized. It's a very calm Zen feeling. So if you haven't gotten to try this stuff yet, you'll need to go to the thealexjonesstore.com and get your methylene blue today.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.